Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 5 of This Week in the Hawks. Today is Friday, January the 27th, 2017, good lord, we're already, what a great start off to today. What can I say, it's very wet outside, it's not nice, I got caught in the rain coming home from work, but hey, we're here now and we're going to talk some Hawks basketball for who knows how long, because these always surprise me how long they go on. I guess starting off with the news, obviously the biggest news coming through last night, the Western and Eastern Conference All-Stars were announced. Let's just remind ourselves the starters for the West. We have Curry, Harden, Durant, Kawhi Leonard, and Anthony Davis. In the East, we have DeMar DeRozan, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Giannis, and Jimmy Butler. That's who it was. Those are the starters. We'll start off in the Western Conference first. We're going to spend a little bit more time talking about this today. So here are the Western Conference reserves. Russell Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Marc Gasol, DeAndre Jordan, and Gordon Hayward. Two first-time selections here in the West with Jordan and Hayward. Good to see both those guys on it. I am quite surprised that there are two Warrior reserves here in the end. I thought maybe one of Green or Klay would get in. Obviously not the case. Both of them are here. And no Chris Paul is quite surprising, because I would have thought, even though he's not going to be able to play this game, that you would at least select him, recognize that he's an All-Star, and then replace him with, let's say, your DeAndre. So I thought that was a little strange. The fact that CP3 didn't get any kind of recognition here, but you know, there's always snubs with these kind of things. And you can't really argue with the guys that are here. I know people kind of wanted Rudy Gobert over DeAndre Jordan, but I think you have to have at least one Clipper representative in there. It would be hard to justify having two Utah selections here and no Clipper. Because at the end of the day, you know, DeAndre and Rudy Gobert, they both do extraordinary fantastic work for their teams, and for me, it's a coin flip between those two guys, really. So I think they did the right thing here putting DeAndre in, but hey, maybe next year for Rudy Gobert. Good to see Marc Gasol here. I love me some Big Spain, third time selected here, and then DeMarcus Cousins alongside him. Good to see the big men. I'm looking forward to seeing these big men go to work here, because we've got Davis starring this one, and then we got the three bigs off the bench. So I like that. It's good for the big men with all this, all the questions about, are the big men going out? And it's like, no. So we've got three quality All-Star bigs here. So that's good. That should be fun. And now the Eastern Conference reserves. So we have Isaiah Thomas for his second straight season, John Wall, Kevin Love, Paul George, Kemba Walker, Kyle Lowry, and Paul Millsap making the Eastern reserves. Just the one first-time selection here for the East. There's, of course, Kemba Walker for the Hornets, and I am so happy that he's an All-Star this season, because I was really afraid. And this was the good thing about the coach's decision this year. They didn't reef onto that legacy kind of trap. So there's no Kobe, obviously, this year. Tim Duncan, obviously, isn't here. Dirk hasn't been playing a lot. And Wade and Melo, the two players you thought may just get sneak in there from the coaches, haven't been playing too well, at least not as well as these guys. So I'm glad, because I was really afraid that Dwayne Wade would be selected ahead of Kemba Walker, but I'm delighted to see Kemba Walker. What did you say? Kemba Walker here in this game. A ton of, I'm just looking at this here, 1, 2, 3, 4 guys in this team. This is their fourth All-Star game. John Wall, Kevin Love, Paul George, and Paul Millsap. This is all those guys. This is their fourth time heading to the All-Star game. So that's cool. Twitter obviously erupted. Part of it did anyways when Paul Millsap was announced as the last Eastern Conference reserve. And of course, Joel Embiid was, quote, snubbed. Which I think is garbage, because Embiid has not played enough in my eyes. And I think the big thing about why Millsap was selected. Okay, you look at the numbers all you want, and yeah, obviously Embiid's are better. I mean, you can look at the numbers if you want, but you'll only find that, yes, Embiid averages more in less minutes. He's also on a crap team, and with him, he just hasn't played enough games. He doesn't have, and this is the thing with when you get to the All-Star reserves, it stops being about the fans and it's about the coaches and who the coaches respect. And Paul Millsap has earned that universal respect among coaches. So I think he was always likely to win that little nod ahead of Embiid. Embiid's big hope was obviously if he was voted in, then that would be his sure way of getting in. When you leave it to the reserves, wasn't as sure. It's great, fantastic. Philly are 8-2 in January. But just I don't understand people using that as an argument for why Embiid should be an all-star this season. Yes, it's a great month for him and the Sixers, but it's the season. It's not All-Star month. How you play over 1 month. Otherwise, we'd be talking about Damian Lillard being an All-Star reserve for his first month of the season. But you know what? It doesn't work like that. So Embiid, he'll be there in the future, like probably 9, 10 times. I think this could be Millsap's last appearance. We'll have to wait and see. So I'm happy, very happy that he's here, and common sense has actually prevailed here. So that's good. Paul George, you could argue. I had this argument on Twitter yesterday. Well, not argument. I had a conversation with two people yesterday about this, and I'd be perfectly fine with Jabari Parker ahead of him, ahead of Paul George. I think Paul George hasn't had a spectacular season by his own standards. The Pacers are kind of around 500. He's not been as good as he could have been, or has been in the past. And I'm not talking about before his injury. So I don't know. You could throw that one up. I definitely think his reputation has definitely helped him cement the spot. And it's good to see Kevin Love here as well, after all the crap he took in his first 2 years in Cleveland. God, he's playing excellently this season. A very deserving All-Star. I want to bring back the Paul Millsap, obviously. We're a Hawks podcast here. And let's just talk about, I just want to compare Millsap's numbers, because I want to kind of combat this narrative that Millsap has regressed. And while I think he's not as good as he was last year, it's very marginal. I think it's very marginal. And obviously, with having to accommodate with Dwight, we're seeing a few different things from Millsap and how he's had to kind of change a little bit compared to playing with Al Horford. Obviously, example of that, his blocks are down this season, mainly because that Dwight is kind of anchoring the defense, whereas Horford wasn't as good as that at the rim as such. So let me just run through Millsap's numbers. Let's start from last season. So in the 15-16 season, Millsap averaged 17.1 points per game on 47% shooting from the field, 31% from the three-point line, 75.7% from the free throw line, 9 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.8 steals, 1.7 blocks, 2.4 turnovers, a true shooting percentage of 55.6%, and a plus minus rating of plus 2.7. Those are Millsap's kind of splits from last season. You look at the splits from this season. Right now he's averaging 18 points a game, that's a career high, on 44.4% shooting, 33.3%, so 33.5 I should say, 8.1 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 1.8 steals, a block, 2.3 turnovers, a true shooting percentage of 53.6%, a plus minus rating of 30, chinny Mac, that'd be extreme, plus minus rating of 3.9, and oops, I forgot to throw in his free throw percentage. It's 75% again. So very, 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 very similar numbers. Some are up, some are down. It does even itself out. So why I think that Millsap isn't as kind of dominant in a sense as he was last year, I think that's more to do with the type of player Dwight Howard is and how Millsap kind of has to, fit around that more so than anything else. Obviously, the shooting percentage is down a little bit. It's been definitely been increasing of late, and so you can argue that. But the true shooting percentages are very similar. I really don't think Millsap has regressed that much. If he was a consensus lock as an All-Star reserve as he was last year, I don't know why there was confusion about that this year. I think he's very deserving. We've seen Paul Millsap. What happens to this team when Paul Millsap isn't on the floor? It's really not pretty. He is the most valuable player on this team, and on a 27-19 team, the fourth best record in the East, I don't see why you wouldn't have him there. And again, I understand the case for Embiid. And look, I love Joel Embiid. I have, unlike many, and I'm saying this now, unlike many of you who just hopped on that bandwagon this year when he started playing, I actually loved Embiid when, not when he's in college, because I'm not going to lie and say I watched him in college. I watched pre-draft footage and I was in awe because he compared him to kind of Hakeem Olajuwon. Numbers were very similar, but he just looked fantastic. I was really rooting for him. He would have been the number one pick if he hadn't hurt his back just before the draft. So I've always been on this MB train, unlike some people who just say they have. I actually have. So I'm rooting for him in the future. I just didn't think he deserved it over Paul Millsap this season, but I think he will be next season. Other bits of news this week, very, very quiet week for the Hawks amidst, we're getting into the depths of trade season. Not much has happened since Kyle Korver has been traded across the league. I'm just going to read this from the AJC and Chris Vivlamore. Hawks looking to operate the D-League's Erie Bayhawks for 2 years while they wait for their arena in College Park to be built. Let me just read some of this here. It's from Vivlamore. The Hawks replaced the Magic in operating the Erie Bayhawks in Pennsylvania, beginning with the 2017-18 season for some next season. The deal would not interfere with the timeline for the Hawks' planned franchise in College Park that will begin operating for the 2019-20 season. The deal is still pending final approval, and this article was written on the 23rd, so we're still in that kind of pending phase, I suppose. The Hawks will operate the Bayhawks for the 17-18 and 18-19 seasons. Anything else interesting? No. Obviously, this kind of really helps the Hawks short term, kind of just jump the gun. They don't have to wait so long to operate a D-League franchise, kind of implement their own style and get their own coaches kind of in there, get their practice and get their young guys down. You know, it's great that they'll have been able to do that before this new arena is built. So that's encouraging. Hawks have definitely needed their own D-League affiliate, and now it seems like they're going to get one. So that's fantastic news for the organization taking that next step. And so that's fantastic to see that happen. The Hawks played 4 games this week, coming back from last Friday. They had a 3-game homestand in the Bulls, the Sixers the next day on the Saturday, the Clippers on Monday, and then the Bulls on Wednesday. Let's start with that Bulls game from last Friday. We won't spend too long on this because it's been a while and another Bulls game has happened since. The Hawks won this one 102-93. And if you woke up next morning and saw that scoreline, it would not have done this game justice. The Hawks ran out to a 34-point lead in this game. They outscored the Bulls 35-13 in the first quarter, capped off by a beautiful Tim Hardaway buzzer beater. Fantastic stuff. The Hawks put the foot down in the second quarter. And again, the third, they took that 34-point lead and took a 30-point lead into the fourth quarter. And Bud decided to, as you would, on the first night of a back-to-back and leading by 30 in your own building, decided to put the bench in, get some minutes there. Fortunately, the bench was not very good. The Bulls was, of course, and Hoiberg sent his own bench in. The Bulls' bench did a much better job with the Hawks' bench. They dug into that lead, more so in the middle to later stages of the quarter rather than straight away from the beginning, like not beginning like on a 6-7-0-8-0 run. They took this game down to a 14-point lead with 2 minutes 30 left, eventually cutting it to 10, and then the Hawks, Bud, you know, forced to send back in Hardaway, Millsap, and Schroeder to seal this deal, and they eventually did. The lead, but not before the lead being cut down to as low as 5 from 30 in the fourth quarter. Oh my goodness. Absolutely horrible. But the Hawks eventually got it done. Millsap was mad that the young guys made him come in and miss a shot. Millsap was a perfect 4-for-4 from this game, before exiting in the third, at the end of the third quarter and getting that rest. You know, he even untied his shoelaces and had to retie those shoelaces and come back in and miss a shot that made him shoot 4 or 5, scoring 14 points. So I'm sure, I wonder which rookie felt the wrath of that afterwards. Very bad for the second unit like that. And I'm not talking second unit, I'm talking like Bembry, Gary Neal, for a little bit he paid, Prince, and Mike Scott. And to an extent, Chris Humphreys, because it was amazing watching that that bench unit go at it. Like, Chris Humphreys was the best player on the floor for the Hawks in that time. He was doing a lot of good things out there. Didn't play the entire fourth quarter. But yeah, not good for the lower ranks of the bench unit. Weird feeling to this game, because even though they won, the Hawks, it was too close to... There's this weird feeling about it. Like, it didn't feel complete in a sense, because the way they surrendered that massive lead and getting it down as low as 5 as the Bulls did, getting that nervous at the end, it's a weird feeling this game. But hey, they got it done. Bulls turnovers killed them here, 24 of them. The Hawks scoring 28 points off of those. Bulls had some good looks. They had some good open shots. Camp just didn't fall. I thought Robin Lopez played some great defense on Dwight Howard, who only ended up with 11 points on 3 of 11 shooting and 5 of 8 from the free throw line. You know, those two were going at it. They got a little bit chippy there in the second half. They had to be separated. Not really separated, but as separated as it is today in this NBA. So, you got to give credit to Robin Lopez. I'm a big Rolo fan. I have enjoyed him smashing mascots across the league. So that's always fun. He's actually a good player. He's a very sturdy player. I like him quite a bit. I think he just has a great grasp of the fundamentals. I just really like his game. I like him. And he did a good job on Dwight here. And those two got history. You know, don't forget that that playoff series with the Blazers and the Rockets from 2014. Those two went to battle there. Of course, the Blazers prevailing in 6 games after Damian Lillard hit the series-winning 3. At the buzzer. That was a great series. I really enjoyed that series. I particularly liked game, because the Rockets, I think they dropped both, because the Rockets had home court advantage in this series. It was a 4-5 matchup, I believe. And the Rockets dropped both of their home games, partly because LaMarcus Aldridge was absolutely unbelievable. But yeah, those two have history, and it's good to see them go at it again there. Also worth mentioning in that game, Dennis Schroeder is also very good. 25 points on 11 of 14 shooting. More excellent shooting efficiency from Schroeder. Moving on to the game the next day, on Saturday, 21st of January. The Sixers came into Phillips Arena. No Embiid for the Sixers. He had a little bit of a knee contusion that he suffered the night before. He wouldn't have played anyways, because this was also the second night of a back-to-back against Philly. Hawks winning this one 110-93. This game was closer than it should have been for a long time. The Sixers did a good job kind of getting out in front early, keeping up with the Hawks. They did have some good shooting from behind the arc. They did make 12-29 from 3-point range. That helped them. Jahlil Okafor had some good rhythm in the first quarter, getting some buckets there. And it's just that kind of that end of the third quarter run, and in the fourth, the Hawks kind of pulled away a little bit. But the Sixers had a great chance to actually really make this game interesting. They trimmed, I think it was an 18-point lead. They trimmed it to 7 and had the ball. And Robert Covington missed the 3-pointer that would have put them within 4. And the game kind of got away from Philly after that. This is all in the fourth quarter, of course. And that was a big point in that game. And unfortunately for the Sixers, it didn't go down for them. They lost this game. Eventually by 17, which it seems a little bit unkind to the Sixers, because I thought they played well, had some good effort, shorthanded. The Hawks were, to an extent, shorthanded. Mike Muscala missed another game here, having not played in the Bulls game, of course, not even the last week against the Knicks as well, with that ankle injury. So that was unfortunate for the Moose. We also had the Wave. The Wave was going in this game. A really crappy Wave as well. And also a distracting Wave, because I think it was Millsap was shooting free throws and the Wave is going on in front of him, and it's like, stop, wait till he's finished or something. Let him concentrate making the free throw. Speaking of Millsap, Very good in this game. 22 points of 9 of 14 shooting. Kent Bazemore also had a great game here. 16 points on 7 of 12 shooting from the field. 2 of 4 from behind the arc. All in 24 minutes for Baze, which was excellent. Good stuff from Baze. The Sixers didn't help themselves really with turnovers. They committed 21 of those, leading to 17 Atlanta points. And they were outscored 14 to zip in the second chance points. And, you know, Dwight, you know, 15 rebounds here in this game to go along with 13 points. Had a big say in that. I was a little disappointed in Dwight this game. I thought, you know, given the matchup, you know, Noel's not starting, Embiid's out, Jahlil Okafor, I thought that was a great opportunity for Howard to just, I thought that was a very favourable matchup. And Dwight wasn't as dominant as I kind of expected him to be against a team like this. So I was a little disappointed in that sense. But look, you know, he did score 13 points on 5 of 7 shooting and grab 15 rebounds. You know, I'm not saying it was a bad performance by Dwight, not at all. I just was expecting a little bit more. And yeah, because I know he's capable of more. Monday, 23rd. So Monday just gone. Hawks played the Clippers at home to finish off his 3-game homestand. No CP3, no Blake Griffin for the Clippers. didn't help much. The Clippers still won 115 to 105. Oh, this has to be one of the worst losses of the season for the Hawks. They were not good defensively, I think, in this game. I mean, it was a lack of focus and attention to detail that should have been there. I think they underestimated this team. Definitely underestimated this team. Paul Millsap kind of alluded to it afterwards. Clippers came out and played well. Austin Rivers was great. I think he scored 27 points. Clippers shot 14-24 from behind the arc. And I kind of broke this down as well. They weren't great threes to give away. The Clippers kind of went up big here. They went up by as many as 24 in the second quarter. Outscoring the Hawks 28-19 in that quarter. Having outscored them 30-21 the first. It was absolutely incredible how... Yeah, just bad. It was just bad, man. I could try to explain it. I could try, but it was just bad. Just being down that much against the Clippers, shorthanded as they were without the stars. You know, so yeah, not great. But look, you can't win them all. I think the biggest thing for me for here was the Hawks' bench. A season low 13 points from the bench. Mike Muscala has been missed big time here again. Missed this game with that ankle injury. Bench missed him big time as the Hawks' bench was outscored by 38-13. Like Jamal Crawford himself outscored the Hawks' bench by 6, 19-13. And the shame, because they had 28 assists, the Hawks had just eight turnovers. I think that was their second best turnover game this season. And there's a shame that they couldn't really capitalize on that and that great game and the turnovers, because that's been a problem this season. And finally, moving on to the very much talked about game from Wednesday, the Hawks' second meeting with the Bulls in about a week. 119-114 victory here for the Hawks at the United Center. Whew, good Lord, where do we start? We'll get to the comments in a bit. Let's talk about the game first. Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade were motivated. Haven't played pretty poorly. Butler played all right in that Bulls game, but land the other Friday, but Wade did not play very well. They came out motivated. They were aggressive early, and they just embarrassed the Hawks' wing defenders. They combined for 73 points in the end. I think poor Bates was torched by Wade, unfortunately. Cephalosha didn't have much luck with Butler either. They just caught the wrath of those two players. You know, with everything that's going on in Chicago, turmoil with the coaching, front office, teams, and obviously not very good. Butler and Wade are very motivated individuals that get pissed off easily, and when they lose, and they'd lost badly against Atlanta, they wanted to bounce back, and they did to an extent. They played well here, hit a lot of those shots that kind of weren't falling in the other game, started falling here, and that kind of put them up big. The Hawks were just unable to get any sort of consistent stops. They trailed for the majority of this game again. Hawks did a good job at keeping close to the Bulls in this game. They were, you never really let go too out of control. They always kept within kind of 8-5 kind of range, despite the Bulls leading for pretty much all of this game. Hawks did a good job kind of keeping themselves close, keeping themselves in a run, of the Bulls, but couldn't really make that run because they just couldn't get consistent defensive stops. Unable to stop Butler and Wade. And then the Bulls took a 110-100 lead in the fourth quarter with just over 3 minutes left. And you're beginning to get the feeling that this could be it. Like this game seems like it's slipping away. And after Wade hit that jump shot to put the Bulls up by 10, Hawks called a timeout. And this is where, well, the game just basically, it all happened so quickly. And it was so shocking that people didn't really know how to react to it. I think it's funny listening to Bob Rathbun on the broadcast. He knew it was happening, but he didn't know how to react to it because it happened so quickly. Hawks closed this game on a 19-4 run. They hit 3 3-pointers in about a minute and 19 seconds to cut that 10-point deficit to 1. They finally got some stops, forcing Butler to kind of pass a little bit. Tim Hardaway Jr. had a great contest on Dwayne Wade when Dwayne Wade tried to get by him and then tried to pull up on him. Great defense by THJ. They made 3 3-pointers. I mentioned this in my recap. Wade was quite poor in his defense of some of these threes. He just let Dennis Schroeder just have that wide open shot. I think he was trying to telegraph a pass out behind the three-point line and he would just come in and steal it. Good thing Hawks are smart. And they obviously saw that. Oh, hey, there's a man open in the corner. Let's find him. So they did that. So Wade just completely left Schroeder alone. And then in transition, you know, the ball's being brought up the floor. I think it's Hardaway. You know, passes there, Millsap or Hardaway. They pass to Bazemore. And Wade is just kind of trailing Bazemore. And he's just kind of he's pointing at someone to go cover him. But he's not rushing back himself. He just kind of strolled back. Ball goes back into Bazemore. He's kind of just basically running into the paint to the rim. Only Jimmy Butler in the way, who's supposed to be guarding Tim Hardaway Jr. Hardaway Jr. ends up with an open shot on the wing after Bazemore finds him with the beautiful, would you call that a netball or a volleyball pass or a touch pass? Whatever there was very, very nice. And here Hardaway hits the three-pointer. Bulls call a timeout. And then they just couldn't get stops. You know, couldn't stop the Hawks. Schroeder got to the rim. Bazemore, who had 7 assists in this game. A really great game from Bazemore. He found Howard for the lob. The Bulls lost 119-114. Incredibly. They should never have lost this game. And that's, you know, this is when it all kicked off. So we are going to, we're going to have a look at some quotes because Butler and Wade just flipped after the game and start pointing fingers everywhere. Let's look at Jimmy Butler first. If you don't come in this mother effer pissed off after you lose any game, something is wrong. This is your job. This is what you're supposed to love to do. And I don't think everyone looks at it that way. I want to play with guys who care, guys who play hard, and who want to do well for this organization. Who wants to do whatever it takes to win. Who cares who's shining? When we're winning, everything looks great. Or everybody looks great. End quote. Then let's jump to Wade. Oh, good Lord, he has a whole lot to say. I wish I could say that everyone in here is going to go home and not eat tonight. I can't say that. I don't know that they care enough. Games are supposed to hurt. You're not supposed to sleep. You're not supposed to want to talk to anybody. I don't know if that is in the guys in this locker room. Hopefully they can prove me wrong. But I will challenge them to see if losses like this hurt. We can play bad. We can miss shots. But we're having too many lapses of these. This is just unacceptable. If you want to do anything besides have an NBA jersey on and make some money. That's all we're doing right now. I'm not at home with people. But I don't know if I see enough. I don't know if I see enough guys who really, really want it. I'm 35 years old. I have 3 championships. It shouldn't hurt me more than it hurts these young guys. They have to want it. If they don't want it, then we'll show up and play Friday. Hopefully we'll win. If we don't, then we go to dinner again and keep going until the season's over. It has to change. It has to hurt inside to lose games like this. This shit should flippin' hurt. essentially. And I guess more Wade quotes. I don't know what happened. I don't know how you fix it. it just doesn't mean enough for guys around here to want to win ball games. It pisses me off, but I can't be frustrated. I can't care too much for these guys. They have to care for themselves. We have to do better knowing where you shots are coming from and then knocking them down. We have to do better knowing film, knowing your personnel. As a team, we have to do better, man. And yes, you know, they're harsh. These teammates heart the problem. And Wade said, I don't know. I never had that problem. They have to figure it out as individuals. Guys have to look at themselves in the mirror and see if you really care enough. Are you putting everything into it for your teammates and for yourself? I would say no. Me and Jimmy, coach puts the ball in our hands a lot to make plays, to make shots. That's our job. I think for the majority of the season, we've done it when counted, when we needed to. I can look at Jimmy and say, Jimmy is doing his job. I think Jimmy can look at me and say, Dwayne is doing his job. I don't know if we can keep going down the line and be able to say that. Right. So a lot of finger pointing there. I don't mind from Butler so much. I do mind it from Wade. Mainly because Wade has been shit on defense all season. You know, of course it's everyone else's fault. Not his own, not Butler's. They're excused. And Wade is excused. Let me excuse myself. No, let's blame everyone else for the problems that we have. And that I'm the part of the problem. Wade is part of the problem here as well. Two of those three-pointers the Hawks made down in that 9-0 run before the Bulls took another timeout there after the Hawks cut from 110 to 100 to 109, 110. Like, Wade was responsible for at least one of those three-pointers, if not two. And how can he get on people about that when he's responsible here as well? So I don't understand that. Jerry and Grant wasn't too pleased on Twitter afterwards, saying basically that all I want to do is win. I work hard. It's not about money. You know, basketball's in my blood. Then we had the granddaddy of them all, Rajon Rondo, going to Instagram, posting a picture of him, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce in Celtic uniforms. They're all kind of dapping each other up, probably after an and one or something. And this is what Rondo had to say. My vets would never go to the media. They would come to the team. My vets didn't pick and choose when they wanted to bring it. They brought it every time they stepped in the gym, whether it was practice or a game. They didn't take days off. My vets didn't care about their numbers. My vets played for the team. When we lost, they wouldn't blame us. They took responsibility and got in the gym. They showed the young guys what it meant to work. Even in Boston, when we had the best record in the league, if we lost a game, you could hear a pin drop on the bus. They showed us the seriousness of the game. My vets didn't have an influence on the coaching staff. They couldn't change the plan because it didn't work for them. I played under one of the greatest coaches, and he held everyone accountable. It takes 1 through 15 to win. When you isolate everyone, you can't win consistently. I may be a lot of things, but I'm not a bad teammate. My goal is to pass what I learned along. The young guys work. They show up. They don't deserve blame. If anything is questionable, it's the leadership. And, you know, I have my grievances with Rondo. I do. The Bill Kennedy. No, he made those anti-gay comments to that official. That really left a bad taste in my mouth for Rondo. But I absolutely agree with him here. And you know, obviously Rondo's part of the problem as well. And that's, you know, that's to be said. But the way Wade kind of just pinned the blame and threw his teammates, apart from he and Jimmy, under the bus like that, I think that's unacceptable. Especially to do in the media as well. It's okay, like, you got in a player's meeting, okay, you get behind closed doors and you lay it on every player, but I didn't like that from Wade at all. And now this looks like a real messy situation. Where on earth do we go from here? How are these guys going to play together? How is this going to resolve? Either it can be used for good and they can maybe rally from this and talk it out and learn from it. Or, and I think this is a more likely case, this will completely rip that team apart. And now you're going to start to see the cracks. Just so many of the cracks come to the fore. You kind of already saw a little bit with coaching. We've had this with Hoiberg and Butler, and Butler, I think it was last season, kind of getting on Hoiberg. You need to hold guys accountable more. stuff like this. And then there's this great video of Højbjerg saying something to Butler. You can hear, and you can lip read basically what he's saying. F no, while looking absolutely bewildered with Højbjerg. This is not ending well. As we kind of all expected it that it would end. I know it started off decently enough with the Bulls, but this is how we realistically saw the Bulls' season going, and it has taken until game 47 for this to finally become a problem. I'm sure the New York Knicks are absolutely thrilled, because this has taken the spotlight completely away from them for the time being, and onto the Bulls and the gong show that is. All right, that is enough of that. I guess quickly to the game itself. A great balanced effort here from the Hawks. All five starters scored in double digits, led by Dennis Schroeder's 24. Paul Millsap added 21. And a big shout out, Tapo Cephalosha, 18 points. Only the fourth game this season where he scored 15 or more points. 6 of 8 shooting for Tabo here, 3 of 4 from behind the arc. Really good game. I'd love to see this a little bit more from Tabo, but hey. And then Tim Hardaway Jr. had 17 points off the bench. Good night for him. Hawks shot 17 of 30 from behind the arc. The Bulls' three-point defense was not very good. Were able to... No, it wasn't so much of them catching fire. They just made open shots. These happened to be three-pointers. It wasn't so that they caught fire, hitting 6 of 8 in the quarter. The Bulls just let them have a lot of open shots. And, here's a shocking revelation for you. Professional basketball players make open jump shots. Can you imagine? So congratulations, Chicago, for doing that. Yeah, I don't have anything else to say about this game. There's not much to say about this game other than the comeback and the comments post-game. So hey, have fun with those. Just looking over that four-game stretch then for the Hawks. 3-1 record, like I mentioned. Averaged 109 points on 47.7% shooting from the field. Very impressive, 41.6% from the three-point line. Hawks have not been a very good three-point shooting team. They definitely rank, they were 22nd last when they last checked yesterday in terms of three-point percentage. Also this week, they shot 75.9% from the free-throw line. 41.5 rebounds, 26 assists per game, 9.3 steals, 3.8 blocks, 14 turnovers a game. Yeah, that could be a little bit better. An offensive rating of 108.1, a defensive rating of 104.4, and a net rating of 3.7 plus. So good week for the Hawks in that sense. The Clippers loss, that's disappointing, but you know what? You'd probably take a 3-1 week if it was given to you again. So I think I'll take that. Looking at who's in form this week, kind of everyone of note from the rotations kind of in a good spot right now. Over these last four games, Dennis Schroeder, 21.3 points per game on 47% shooting from the field. Paul Millsap, 19 points per game on 53% shooting. Great week for Bayes, 14.8 points per game, 49% shooting from the field, 38.9 from three. Bayes has really come to life in these last 2 weeks. He's looked much, much better than he has at the beginning of the season. It's great to see him hitting some form. Cephalosha has been playing well. 11.8 points per game, 58% shooting, 80% from three. To be fair, he's only making one a game on 1.3 attempts, but you know what? He still got a hit. And kind of no one really had a bad week in the sense of all the guys who played major rotation minutes. I mean, Mike Scott might be the only one here, but he only played 3 games in 10 minutes. You'd like to see Mike do a little bit better. I think there's a real opportunity for him to really reassert himself in this Hawks rotation with Mike Muscala out. Muscala was upgraded to questionable for the Bulls game, and he's questionable tonight in the game against the Wizards. We shall see. Speaking of which, Hawks play 4 games from this Friday to next Friday. They're in action tonight in what is a huge game against the Washington Wizards at home, where they also have something special prepared for the Atlanta Falcons. So this is a release. The Atlanta Falcons' run to the Super Bowl has energized the city of Atlanta, put the city at the center of the sports world, before the Falcons head to Houston, the Atlanta Hawks will honour the Falcons in a one-of-a-kind pre-game ceremony prior to their 8 p.m. matchup against the Washington Wizards tonight. So that's very intriguing, one-of-a-kind. So I'm very interested to see what happens here. I wonder if it's anything to do with the court projection. They sure know how to tease these Hawks PR here, but hey, that'll be interesting. The Hawks are in action again on Sunday at home against the Knicks, the final meeting of the Knicks this season. Thank goodness, because I'm sick of seeing the Knicks and hearing about the Knicks. So I'm glad that the Hawks will be done with them by Sunday. Then for a little road trip on Wednesday night, the Hawks are in action against the Heat in Miami for a divisional matchup. They're in a good form, actually. Heat are in great form at the moment. I believe they've won 5 in a row against some good teams. You know, the Bucks, the Rockets, the Warriors, I think, are in there as well. So they're on a good little run here, the Heat. So the Hawks need to really not underestimate this team, because they're playing well, and Dion Waiters is playing well as well. And you already know that he's going to go off like 35 points. So that's the first game of back-to-back during the week. The second game is on Thursday. It's a really interesting one. It's against the Rockets on the road. Dwight Howard going back to Houston for the first time since he left Houston as a free agent. I do expect there to be some boos for Dwight once he gets to Houston, but you know, he gets booed pretty much everywhere else he goes, so why is this any different? I don't think there's really hate between Dwight and Houston compared to Dwight in LA. I just think people are a little bit smarter about this situation and just kind of accept that. And this is the way James Harden looks at it as well. It just didn't really work, you know, and that's kind of all you can say about it, really. No lies here. It just didn't really work out. So I think he'll be booed, but you know what? He's booed everywhere else and still booed in Lakerland. Probably even more so. So look, that's going to be a thing. That's going to do it, I reckon, for this week in the Hawks. I meant to say this at the top of the show. Oh, it's going to be a funny joke. And now, like, I wonder if anyone's going to hear it. I have a headset here. Hopefully I have a better microphone. I'm waiting for a splitter, an audio splitter, to arrive. That'll make it actually work with my Mac. So hopefully this splitter plays more than 36 games. Ooh, burn. I feel so bad. That was so bad. But look, that's going to do it. Thank you very much for listening. Talk to you soon.